Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 36, Seatbelts to Airbags and Beyond. First of all, it's hard for me to imagine the idea or world without seatbelts, certainly in cars anyway. And I'll talk about the laws of physics here in a couple of minutes, but it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, in 1967, which is when seatbelts were first required by law to be in every passenger car in this country, 1967. So prior to that, it was up to the manufacturer whether they wanted to put seatbelts in their cars or not. And it's kind of crazy if you think about it, really, but that's a whole nother conversation. But I mean, I grew up with my parents having a 1964 Chevy Impala Super Sport. And of course, there was only lap belts. There was no such thing as shoulder belts back then. But we were brought up to where you get into a car, you put your seatbelt on. That's all there is to it. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. You just automatically did it. And I certainly raised my kids to be the same way, and they've grown up to be adults who put their seatbelt on. And the crazy part about it in regards to the laws of physics is that, you know, I think people don't really think about the fact that whatever speed the car is traveling at and you're inside of it, if the car comes to an abrupt stop, even if you're just applying the brakes yourself and avoiding an accident, but certainly if the car comes to a stop because of an impact, whatever speed the car was at, when it comes to a stop, you continue moving forward, back, whatever the case may be, depending upon where the impact came from, at the same speed. So if you're traveling at 30 miles an hour in your car and your car comes to a sudden stop, you continue to travel forward, backward, whatever, at 30 miles an hour, or 40, or 50, or 60. And so this is why, even in today's world where there's a seatbelt law, which is to protect, well, to take a line from Seinfeld, why'd we have to come up with a seatbelt law? Well, we had to come up with a seatbelt law to protect the brain that was operating so poorly, it wasn't trying to even protect itself. Okay, let alone anyone else. I mean, if you're in a situation where you're doing evasive maneuvers in your car to try to avoid something and you're not seatbelted in, you can hardly even drive the car because most of your physical energy is being used to hold you into the position where you can drive the car. So if nothing else, seatbelts are part of a system to not only protect you in the event of an accident, but it's to hold you in place so that you can continue to drive the car in evasive maneuvers. So seatbelts are kind of important. But, you know, so again, laws of physics, you know, if you're traveling at 40 miles an hour and the car comes to an abrupt stop, you continue to travel at 40 miles an hour regardless of which direction that is. And then there's going to be an impact. And not to be morbid, but there's three impacts that the body goes through when you actually hit something. In this case, a car, the inside of your car. And that is that there's your body hitting whatever it hits in the car, or maybe even outside of the car. There's your internal organs. Okay, so there's your internal organs hitting your skeleton, and then potentially there's your skeleton hitting, again, the inside of the car or the outside of the car. You know, again, not to be morbid, but we've all, you know, heard of accidents where people were ejected from the car because they weren't seatbelted in. That's all there is to it. And the good news is in today's world, certainly, there's a lot less of that happening because people are seatbelted in. You know, they've finally figured out that, gosh, if you don't wear the seatbelt, number one, you're going to pay for it from a money standpoint because you're going to get a ticket. And in some respects, that police officer is helping to save your life because you could have just as easily been in an accident. Okay. So There's in regards to safety systems in a car, there's what's called passive and there's active safety systems. Passive systems would be like the airbag, as a for instance. Basically, any passive system in the car is doing its it, part of it is the definition of that system is that it's not doing anything for you while you're driving the car. Okay, not a thing. It's dead weight that's being carried around. However, in the event of an actual accident where there is an impact, that passive system now becomes an active system because, again, it's acting now after the fact. In the process of having an actual impact-type accident, it is now trying to protect you. In this case, airbag system. There's quite a few different things that are happening in an airbag system, potentially, depending upon how the car is equipped. And I'll talk about that here shortly. So that's certainly a good example of a passive system is the airbag system. It only comes into play when you're actually having an impact and something is actually happening. Active safety systems would be even things as in performance and handling of the car. Okay. So again, you know, I work specifically on BMWs. They are considered a high performance car. So they do handle quite well. They accelerate well. They brake well. Those are active safety systems. So if you have a car that is capable of handling well and accelerating well and braking well, you have the potential for what would be basically, instead of accident participation, would be accident avoidance. If you can accelerate out of the way or brake out of the way or steer out of the way, then you're not even involved in the accident. Okay, and then you have systems like ABS, DSC, Dynamic Stability Control, Dynamic Traction Control. Of course, if we start talking about ADAS systems, Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, which is, of course, in relatively newer cars, then you have things like, you know, lane departure warning and emergency brake assist. The list goes on and on and on. And for that matter, I've done a podcast about ADAS systems specifically, but basically, anything that helps control the car, helps you control the car without having the accident would be considered an active safety system because it doesn't require you to actually be involved in the accident for that system to help you, okay, with the car. When airbags were first, seat belts, you know, wear them, please, okay? They're doing so much for you. And I think we finally figured out that it's probably a good idea to wear one because I certainly don't recall, that much where I see people not wearing them. And certainly the times I have people in my own car, I do. It is the driver's responsibility. In the state of California, you're supposed to be wearing your seatbelt. And basically it's the driver's responsibility to make sure that everybody in that car has that seatbelt on. Okay. And just another quick thing, too, is I actually saw a nurse do this years ago. You know, when you're wearing a lap and shoulder belt, please do not that shoulder belt, please have that go across your shoulders and across your chest like it's supposed to. Years ago, I was working at the dealership, and it happened to be a nurse was getting into her car. I was saying goodbye to her. We were talking about her car. And she puts her belt on, and she's in the driver's seat, so she kind of nonchalantly and very quickly takes her left arm, pulls it up for a second, and puts the shoulder part of the belt underneath her left arm and across her chest and buckles it, and then she puts her arm down. Okay, so in other words, the shoulder belt was not going across her shoulder, it was going across her chest. And I looked at her, and again, I mean, I noticed it, and the irony of it was the fact that she's a registered nurse. And I go, why'd you do that with your belt? And she says, well, it messes up my dress, you know, if I put it across my shoulder. And I go, you're a registered nurse, right? And she goes, yeah. And I said, do you work in the ER? And she goes, sometimes. And I said, well, then I imagine you see people come in from car crashes. Yeah. And I said, not trying to be morbid or anything, but you realize that by putting that across your chest instead of across your shoulder and across your chest, you are concentrating. If you have an accident, you're concentrating the load and the impact of that accident across your rib cage instead of spreading it out across your shoulder and your upper body and your chest and then down, you know, towards your hip where the belt buckles. And she goes, okay. And I said, you have a bad enough accident, you will break all the ribs in your chest, okay, potentially puncture a lung, and you'll basically bleed to death right there, okay? And she kind of went, no, yeah, you're right. And I said, so it's up to you, but number one, please wear a seatbelt, and number two, please wear it properly, okay? It really won't matter if your dress is messed up or whatever, your shirt, you know, if you're a guy and you're trying to not get your shirt messed up, whatever, because if you have an accident, you potentially will cause a lot of bodily harm to yourself, okay? So, airbags, well, they became, as per NHTSA, National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration, they became mandatory in the early 90s, okay? And I know when they first came out, I mean, I lived through this and saw news reports and stuff. There was people that were getting, you know, severely hurt, killed, again, not to be morbid, decapitated, some nasty stuff. And part of the reason that this happened, because of people, number one, you know, people still at that time were not wearing their seatbelts as much as they do now. And so when NHTSA said to the car manufacturers, okay, by this model year, you guys all have to have airbags, then some of the things the manufacturer did certainly was to go to NHTSA and say, well, what criteria, I mean, are we supposed to be using when we're designing these airbag systems and they're going to be deploying, obviously, at a very high rate of speed, okay? What's some of the criteria that we should be using when we're, you know, trying to figure this out and design them? And at the time, over half the people in the United States, as per surveys done, still did not wear their seatbelt. So obviously, if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you're involved in an impact, an accident, your body's going to move forward at a very high rate of speed versus if you had your seatbelt on. Okay. So initially, when airbags first came out, and it was just typically just the driver's airbag only and the steering wheel that was available to be deployed, they had to come out at about 200 miles an hour. Okay. Rather high rate of speed. I mean, basically, your typical airbag system, once it realizes there's an impact and it's going to deploy the bag, the whole thing is over with in 0.3 of a second. Okay, the whole process. I mean, I have seen super slow motion video of, you know, testing of airbags with cars and obviously test dummies, and it all happens extremely quickly. Because there's a lot of forces at play. And even with a seatbelt on, I mean, you're still going to move forward. Your head is going to move forward, okay, because the seatbelt can only do so much. So the airbag's going to deploy at a very high rate of speed. I'll talk about it here a little bit later on where there's obviously more advanced airbag systems nowadays. They're actually called smart airbags, but I'll talk about that in a moment. But they're deploying at a extremely high rate of speed, and so in the past, if you had your seat adjusted to where you were too close to the steering wheel, there was situations with kids' car seats where people were putting them in the front, which is still not recommended at all. Okay, the safest, best place for a car seat for a child is in the center of the rear seat. Okay. That is the safest place for them. I realize people put them on, you know, either side in the rear. Okay, well, you know, up to you. But the safest place for the child, whether it's forward-facing or back-facing seat, is the center of the rear seat. You know, obviously, as you have more kids, that doesn't become an option anymore. And, you know, that's okay. But in any case, you know, The some of the systems we have now, I mean, BMW specifically, I was talking with a customer about this recently where their airbag light was on, and this happens quite frequently, actually. And ultimately, the fault code was for their seatbelt buckle. And they were like, well, what do you mean? I mean, it mechanically, it works fine. And I said, well, it's not really checking for that. It's looking for, can it electronically see that the seatbelt is buckled? And more importantly, on a BMW, and I'm sure a lot of cars are like this, but I can specifically talk about a BMW, within the seatbelt buckle mechanism, and this is, again, this is for the both front seats only, there is a pyrotechnic device within the seatbelt buckle assembly. And what that means is that when the airbags are deployed, this pyrotechnic device goes off, okay, it fires, and what it does is that it shortens the length of the buckle. Okay, and a person will go, well, why is that important? And it's, you know, it's looking at that circuit. So in this particular case on her car, the reason that the airbag light was on was because that pyrotechnic device circuit had gone open to where it was no longer going to work. And so the airbag light came on and stayed on, and that was the fix was to replace her whole seatbelt buckle assembly. But she's going like, well, why does the belt buckle shorten? I don't understand. And I go, well, and I said, the easiest, you know, realize that the seatbelt is the part that you pull out that comes out from the, you know, the side of the car as far as what's called the B pillar. In other words, the part that's the shoulder belt, that's on a spool, okay, like a thread bobbin or spool, okay. So as you pull it out and then let go of it, it, you know, of course, it wraps back and it rewinds around that spool. Well, of course, it's not wound on there tight, okay, because it's just coming back on its own through a spring action type thing. So think about a bobbin or spool of thread that you have loosely wrapped around it, okay? You start pulling it out, okay? Now, that spool in a seatbelt in a car is what's called an inertia reel. So you've noticed maybe that if you try to pull the seatbelt out too quickly, that it locks up, okay? In other words, as if that was like an impact, okay? If you try to pull it out too quickly, it's called an inertia reel, and it locks the spool, okay? Well, in an accident, when that spool locks, because the seatbelt was wound loosely around the spool, then even though the spool has been locked, okay, there is still what's called spool out. So again, think about thread loosely wrapped around a spool or bobbin of for thread, okay? And you lock the spool with your fingers, and if you keep pulling on the thread seatbelt, it will continue to come out a short distance, okay? Well, in a car, in an accident, if that seatbelt is not only coming out, it's also going to stretch as well because of the impact forces. This is your body still moving forward, getting closer to you hitting something in the car. Okay, steering wheel, whatever. Okay, so in a BMW, when it senses an impact and the inertia reel locks up, which is a mechanical function, it blows this pyrotechnic device, which shortens the seatbelt buckle. So in other words, even though the seatbelt is coming out on one end, it's being shortened on the other end. So ultimately, its total length is still the same. Okay. And they were like, wow, somebody really thought, you know, there's some engineering there. Uh-huh. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. They're trying to make it as safe as possible for you. Bottom line is that, you know, the car is expendable. You're not. Okay. You can buy another car, or you can have that one fixed, okay? But they're trying to eliminate or you know, definitely decrease the possibility of you being hurt in the car. And in regards to repairs after the accident and airbags have been deployed, is typically, first of all, obviously any of the pyrotechnic or airbag devices that have been deployed have to be replaced. Typically, the BMW and I'm sure most of the car manufacturers want all of the impact sensors to be replaced. Okay, this is whether they can see that there's been damage or not. They want them replaced because they've all been subjected to the loads of the impact. Okay, usually wherever these especially airbags, there's a lot of heat generated from the airbag as it's being deployed. And a lot of times, whatever electrical connectors that are connected directly to that airbag, because of this heat, it will actually start to, it'll melt the connector. So normally now you're also replacing connectors and or short, you know, wiring harnesses. So this is all part of the repair process. And the other side of it is that certainly BMW, in regards to repairs, they have a repair procedure where if you are making any repairs to a harness, a wiring harness, if it's more than one, let's say, splice joint, they have to be a certain distance apart from each other, and you're only allowed to have so many splice joints in any one harness. If you have to have more than whatever that amount is, then technically you have to replace that harness. Okay, so this all adds up to the expense of the total repair of the cost of, you know, having the car fixed because of an accident. Frankly, in some respects, there's probably, I'm sure that there's times where the expense of replacing the different components and wiring repairs and things like that in the airbag system could probably be as much, if not more, than the cost of making the mechanical and paint repairs to a car. Okay, it's unfortunate that this ultimately can end up causing the car to be totaled from a, you know, dollars and cents standpoint, where the car, it may have been in a, you know, 30 or 40 mile an hour crash, and yes, you walked away with maybe not even a scratch, okay, but the car potentially can be totaled, okay, which is kind of sad in a way. There's a certain irony there. A person could say, well, gee, isn't that convenient for the car manufacturer? Now the car is totaled, so guess what you do? Go out and buy another car. And of course, they hope that you're buying one of their cars. Since it's just now saved your life, that you're going to go out and buy another, whatever, BMW or whatever the case may be. So yeah, it does. Airbag systems protect, they help. They definitely save lives, but there is a cost factor, and they're not inexpensive to repair. Now we have, I say now, I mean they've been around for quite some time, but you know, initially with airbags, it was kind of a real relatively simple system. BMW's initial first rule or specification was the airbag would only go off if the car was involved in an accident where it hit a solid, non-movable object from 12 miles per hour or higher. Well, another car is not a solid, non-movable object. Obviously, if two cars hit, there's a certain amount of body deformation. In other words, there's impact zones, there's things that are designed into the car to help to reduce the actual total physical forces to the human body or bodies in the car. Okay, there's deformation zones. They're designed to collapse. There's designs for the engine and transmission to what's called submarine underneath the car, so they don't end up inside the car in a major head-on collision. But the airbag system specifically were, you know, if the impact forces were enough to trigger two or more impact sensors, then the airbag's going to deploy. That's it. End of story. And it's going to deploy at a very high rate of speed. It is not controllable. It's either going to stay where it belongs or it's going to deploy, and there's no way of controlling the speed at which it deploys. Once that igniter is set off and the process is set into motion, that airbag's going to deploy. It's going to be deployed at about 200 miles an hour, and the whole thing's over with in 3/10 of a second. Okay. Now, as development went on, and the sensor development and the airbag development, we have what's called smart airbag systems. And so now it actually measures the rate of deceleration. It's measuring, there's pressure sensors within the doors. It's looking at, like, if you have a side impact, it's looking at how much pressure is created within the door, and how high of a rate it goes to it, and what rate it is increasing. And so things like side airbags and head protection systems will deploy based on a lot more information. Okay. You know, there's side curtain airbags. We have HPS, which is head protection system. You have all the way up to where there's potentially a small like airbag pillows within the seats of the car. There's certainly side airbag protection for the rear passengers. I mean, you can easily now in a given car, depending upon how it's equipped, you could have at a minimum anywhere from 6 or 7 airbags, some kind of an airbag system, all the way up to 10, 12, maybe even 14 airbags. Okay. And if the system's working properly, it can not only selectively blow the airbags, but it can change the speed at which they blow. They can be 1, 2, and 3 stage airbag systems. Okay. So it's looking at a huge amount of data as this impact is occurring, and it's making decisions off of this data input and, of course, what the system was designed to do from a programming standpoint. So there's a lot going on. In regards to what I was just mentioning about that it's looking at pressure buildup within the doors, this is from a repair standpoint, this is where it's become more important that a person can't just arbitrarily, like let's say they're going to want to have some special whiz-bang sound system or something, put it in their car. You don't want to just be, you know, drilling holes in a door, even though they're where you can't see them or something, because you're going to change. If that car is ever in a wreck or an impact, if there's an extra holes in the door because of, you know, like I say, like an aftermarket speaker system or something like that, it's going to change the pressure buildup. So ultimately it will affect the deployment of the airbag system, which is not necessarily a good thing as far as it can affect it in a negative way. It's looking at the number of occupants in the car. The system is looking at the weight of people in the car. It's looking at whether the seat belts are buckled or not. Ultimately, it can you know, actually change the airbag inflation rate. One of the things that's kind of interesting about cars over the history of them in regards to, you know, prior to computer-aided design, computer-aided manufacturing, in the 60s and 70s, the what's called the A pillars. Now, this would be if you think about a pillar meaning some kind of vertical or semi-vertical piece of metal, so to speak, like think of a door jamb, okay, that the A pillar on a car would be that first vertical or, you know, angled back metal that goes between the front windshield. It's at the corner of the windshield, and it's typically at the hinge point of the door, of the front doors. That pillar that becomes, it goes from the body, the windshield's on one side of it, and the door's on the other, and it goes into the roof, okay? That's what's called the A pillar. The B pillar would be the one that's in the center of the car, and the C pillar is the one that's at the back of the car, where, again, the rear windshield goes into it, okay? But talking about the A pillar specifically, years ago, before there was computer-aided design and before we had some of the science of metallurgy that we had now, they had to basically design that cars, those pillars, because they couldn't put them through any kind of, you know, computer-aided design thing where they could do accident damage and analysis in a computer program. They had to do it real world. So they would say, well, we're going to make this out of this metal and we're going to have this design and then we're going to crash the car and see what happens. And so years and years ago, those A pillars were actually very wide, okay, because that's all, we didn't know any better, okay? So if you think about it, you know, the wider that A pillar is, obviously it reduces the amount of, you know, visibility you have when you're looking not out the side of the car like the window, but you're looking diagonally out the front of the car, you know, diagonally sideways. And let's say you're trying to see, is there a bicyclist over there or is there a pedestrian or is there a car coming? Well, obviously the wider that A pillar is, the less visibility you have. Okay. So in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, there was a pretty high rate of side impacts that would happen. Well, as they got better and computer-aided design started to come into play and the science of metallurgy to where they realized, hey, if we make it out of this combination of metals, we can make these pillars stronger and yet even make them smaller. Okay. So what happened in the 70s and 80s and early 90s was those A pillars, I mean, all the pillars, but specifically the A pillars, became narrower. Okay, so it increased the visibility you had, and the number of side impacts went down because you could see more. Okay, the reason I'm bringing this all up and the irony of it is that when we started getting the airbag system that have side, you know, HPS, head protection system, typically that system is connected at the bottom of the A-pillar, in other words, close to the bottom of the windshield, and it goes up through the A-pillar. It's housed within the A-pillar, and it connects to typically to the top of the car, assuming this is not a convertible, where it's just behind your head. So because now that area had to house this head protection system, they had to start making the A-pillars wider again. So, of course, the incidences of side impacts have gone up now. The only good part about it is that if you are hit from the side, now you have this nice tubular sock, part of the head protection system, that now inflates and protects your head. But yet, you know, because of technology prior to airbags, we were actually able to reduce side impact incidences. But yet, because of the airbags and the head protection system and having to make the A-pillars wider, now it's gone back up again. So sort of a little bit of irony there. What's going to be coming soon? Well, you're going to have some kind of pedestrian airbags in the front of the cars. Okay. Obviously, they're going to be just a soft, cushiony type thing. Why do we have to have airbags in the front of the cars? Well, the incidences of pedestrian to vehicle accidents, low speed accidents, but doesn't really matter the pedestrian since they have nothing protecting them. Basically, what's happening? Distracted walking. Okay. People are on their cell phones, they're texting, they're not looking where they're going, they step right off the curb. For that matter, the driver of the car could be distracted just as well. Maybe they're using their cell phone too. So now you have two distracted people and an impact occurs. So cars are being designed now because of the increased incidences of vehicle-to-pedestrian impacts. And, of course, the pedestrian doesn't tend to do very well in that scenario since they're being hit by a metal car. There has now been mandated, and they are coming out, certainly out already for that matter, but where you're going to have basically kind of like a pillowy type of device that when the car is sensing that there's a pedestrian in front of it and impact is imminent, it will inflate this device. The idea being is to try to gently but quickly push the pedestrian away from the car so they don't actually become, they're not impacted by the car itself. Okay, the only impact is with this sort of pillow type thing. It's not to say the person, the pedestrian is not going to be still hurt. They could sort of get a certain amount of road rash because they're, you know, potentially going to go flying, but they won't actually be hit by the car per se. Okay. But of course, guess who's paying for the cost of this? Well, we all are basically, but certainly the person who buys the car, okay, it's to help protect the pedestrian, and both of you really. Because potentially neither one of you could be actually watching where they're going. In today's world of distracted driving, distracted walking, distracted living. So maybe there's a lesson to be learned there about use your cell phone as a tool instead of that, you know, it becomes practically your life. And so that finally, that goes to my last little comment, and that is slow down, turn your phone off, stop texting, be aware, live longer, okay? Technology is a great thing, but when it gets to the point where we allow it to our control our lives to where it's potentially actually reducing our lifespan, to me anyway, that becomes a detriment. It's no longer a helpful tool. We've allowed it to become a detriment to our own life, okay? And frankly, that's whether you get hurt or not. You know, if you're just spending your hours and hours playing with your phone because you want to know the latest news and whatever the case may be and be on social media, I mean, that's your choice if that's how you want to spend your life. But there's a whole lot more to do out there, in my opinion. And like I've said at least once in another podcast, I say that because I made a choice in my life, and that is to not own a cell phone, okay? So that's not to say that I can't become distracted. I can, but there's a lot less likelihood of it. And so, part of my distraction is coming up with different podcasts to talk about cars and people and life and stuff. So I'm not doing this as I'm driving in the car. So I'm not putting anybody else in danger right now. So anyway, I hope you learned a couple things about seatbelt and airbag systems. They are certainly good. They're there to protect us. There's no doubt that they do that. The sad part is that we're having a lot more actual impacts these days because of other things that we're doing in our cars besides driving them or besides walking and not paying attention to where we're going. So I would encourage you to, put your phone down and live your life and open up to things that are happening around you and, you know, listen to the birds and watch the grass grow. So maybe you might be missing a few things along the way. So appreciate your time. I thank you for listening. And again, I hope you've learned a couple things about seatbelts and airbags. As always, you can get this through iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. By all means, if you can leave a comment, I'd appreciate it, like or dislike, or if there's a way you think I can improve the podcast, please let me know. Again, you can reach me directly at through email at bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. Again, I've mentioned it before, I'm also on LinkedIn if you want to connect up with me through that. And again, I am the owner and technician at Brad's Motor Works. I'm in Newbury Park, California. And certainly you can look me up through that if you so desire. Appreciate your time. Thank you again for listening. I hope you have a great day and a fantastic week. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you, and thank you again.